This is the Power 98.7 Podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 Podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. This is the second hour of Power Talk, and we'll talk about bullying, particularly male bullying, in the political space. Now, for much of human history, the persistence of male domination was so much a part of the oxygen of life that patriarchy was not even identified as a concept, unlike democracy, autocracy, or oligarchy, whose relative merits, and I would say demerits, have been vigorously debated by us here in South Africa. We have on this show spoken about the abuse of women in leadership. The notion that male supremacy was natural was self-fulfilling, since those who wrote the laws, the poems, the religious books, the philosophy, the history, the medical treatises, and the scientific texts were very largely men writing for the benefit of men. And in fact, in this context, a lot of the greatness of women academics and scholarship had been eclipsed. Patricia de Lille, as you know, has vacated her office, the former mayor of the city of Cape Town. And part of what we're intrigued by are the use of her words, "I am free of abuse." And she was talking about her resigning as a member of the Democratic Alliance. "I can no longer stay in this abusive relationship. When people abuse you, you must walk away." So we'll use that almost as a pivot into the greater picture of male bullying in political spaces in the context of our country and beyond, with guests like Dikeledi Mokoena, who is a political analyst and a political science lecturer. We'll have Jabu Baloyi from the Commission for Gender Equality and Professor Anita Bosch from Stellenbosch University. But I think as a starter, welcome Patricia de Lille, the former mayor of the city of Cape Town now, to begin the conversation. Good morning, Auntie P. How are you doing?
I'm fine, yourself, Iman?
I'm good, thank you. So what did you do today? Are you officially unemployed today?
Yes. I've got such peace of mind. I've got no regrets. I left the office holding my head high, knowing that I've worked day and night to serve the people of Cape Town. So this morning, I spent some time with my huskies. I've got four. And it's unusual for me to be at home, and they all came and jumped onto my bed this morning and out again. So it's all still sinking in, but I've got great peace of mind.
Because it's not, your battles are not quite over. I mean, the DA is still pursuing criminal charges against you and Brett Herron, following their adoption by reports. And we've heard you speak extensively about the Bowman's report into maladministration and so on. But that, those charges or that case then continue. So there's still a cloud, or, you know, an axe hanging over your neck, effectively.
No axe over my head. You know, I know that if I need to seek fairness and justice, I can go to the court. I've won 3 high court cases in 1 year, and I'm very confident, because I respect the independence of the judiciary, that once again I will be successful. The Bowman's report, it is just a report. Those facts, the evidence in that report has need to be tested. And I've not been found guilty of anything. So there's no X hanging over my head, because I'm still contesting what are in the 2 reports, the one that found me guilty and the one that doesn't.
I want to go to this, this thing you raise around an abusive relationship. I cannot any longer stay in this abusive relationship. When people abuse you, you must walk away. Would you mind, just giving us some more detail on why you characterized it that way, and whether it goes to the dominance of male voices in a party like the DA?
Yes, most definitely. Iman, if you are in any relationship or in any organization, all organizations is underpinned by rules and the constitution of that party, systems and due process. And that all members of the party are equal before those rules. What happened in my incident was this male cabal simply ignored and violated their own party constitution just to get at me, just to smear my name. And that's why even in the last High Court judgment, where the full bench of judges found that the DA did not follow its own constitution and rules. Now, to me, that is an abuse of power. When you, because you are in a senior position, violate your own party rules, and it says a lot about those leaders. Now, I've always said, Iman, that I want to be held accountable, and that is why I even go to court again so that we can test those reports. But accountability must also go for all the leadership in the party. I've not heard anything that say that the leaders in the DA responsible for this mess, violating the DA's own constitution, will be held accountable. And that, to me, is the abuse.
Mm. You speak about a male cabal. I'm going to bring in the rest of my guests just now to comment not only about what your story tells us about the power play or the status quo between, you know, the gender status quo in politics, but when you talk about a male cabal in the DA, who's part of that cabal then, in your mind?
Well, I've written them off now. It's a closed chapter in my life, but I won't go into that. People know who they are. Even some of the councillors that have resigned now are naming them. But I mean, the key person there is James South, who is the de facto leader, and he's the one who's responsible to make sure that the party systems and due processes adhere to at all times. He must be held accountable for violating the very same rules that he's supposed to uphold.
Do you feel like you were targeted, like he was part of a group of men in the DA who targeted you?
Yes, no. I've got the evidence. I'm busy writing a book in mine. And by the way, your book is very good too.
Thank you.
I'm busy writing a book where I'm going to document in a chronological order proof with the emails, with the SMSs and all of these things. But he, in terms of his duties and roles and responsibility in the DA constitution, as the federal chairperson, he is supposed to be held accountable for failing to uphold the own party rules.
Dikeledi Mokoena, I'd like to bring you in, and Professor Anita Bosch, I'll bring you in as well, about how you read the political gender status quo in our country today. You are more than welcome to comment on what you have heard Patricia DeLille say over the longest while in terms of her battle with the party. But what's your reading of how these power games or these power plays are manifest in our political space?
All right. No, thank you very much, Man. And thank you to Ms. Patricia DeLille for her bravery. I think for me, you know, this actually reveals the nature of politics, right? And unfortunately, it is actually a patriarchal space. And then we see this over and over, that women who are in political office or in political space, or, you know, any form of leadership for that matter, you know, women are constantly forced or constantly facing various forms of oppression, and basically being a space that says to them, you do not belong here, right? That you are not even sort of expected to be here. And now when you think about patriarchy, which for me actually, you know, when you think about patriarchy is a system of power which actually privileges men on the basis of race, class, gender, sexuality, and all the other facets, including, right, the geopolitical location in which certain people find themselves in. You actually see that within, the political arena, how it's institutionalized. And I think the examples that Ms. DeLille have, you know, that she has highlighted, you know, sort of make us see that clearly, right? You know, so, and I'm also thinking about how unfortunate that, you know, women actually constantly have to find themselves struggling, right? Struggling against these forms of injustices, and which unfortunately, you know, when you are constantly, you know, in that space whereby you have to challenge, where you have to resist, you have to struggle, you are not even given your best, right? You literally are not even given your best. For in this case, you're not actually given the best to the nation, because you are caught up in a space whereby you need to constantly defend And it's really unfortunate. But on the flip side, what I've actually appreciated is basically the role of the judiciary in this case. In as much as I, you know, I acknowledge that we need to change the patriarchal institutions, right? Because that is fundamentally the problem. And as I've mentioned earlier, that politics is basically a patriarchal space. But it's also, I think, in the interim, as we are in the process of changing, you know, these patriarchal institutions, it is somewhat. You know, Adama, sort of comforting to know that we have a system like a judiciary that actually can help young women and also all the other forms of women who are actually in leadership, that we can run there, you know, to actually...
to have our cases arbitrated over and resolved. Professor Anitra Bosch, let me bring you in here at this point. I mean, is it an oversimplification to define it in the way that we have, you know, that it is patriarchy that holds women back from political succession or from rising in their political power? Sometimes a criticism has been made that it is women themselves who muscularize patriarchy.
So, good morning and welcome to the rest of the guests as well. I'm happy and really actually glad, Imam, that you're introducing this phenomenon in that way. I think it is quite important for us just to step back a bit and to look at the political arena more specifically, because this is the one that we're talking about this morning, as a highly contested arena. So no matter who you are, whether you're a man or a woman, or masculine and feminine, either being a man or a woman, within this arena, you will necessarily be dealing with conflict. You will be airing views that everybody doesn't agree with. There will be actions that will be contested. So in that type of arena, and if we talk about common conflict, there's really constructive ways to deal with this and destructive ways of dealing with it. Patriarchy as a concept certainly across the world exists, and more specifically in South Africa. And as Ikhaledi has said, it is really where we believe, or there's a power system where men have the moral authority, social privileges are afforded to them because of being born a man. Very often, the control of property, you know, is immersed in this concept of patriarchy. But coming back to the political arena, this certainly would be part of the underpinning and is of our political interaction. However, politicians interact with each other, as I started off, in a situation mostly of conflict. And to my mind, a lot of what might have happened here involves aspects of bullying, but it's really a destructive way of dealing with conflict. The idea of winning at all costs, displaying anger, retaliating, and not seeking a win-win, when perhaps this could have been solved in quite a different way, instead of public humiliation and criticism, you know, accusations that are being hurled and so forth.
Is the behavior rooted in history, tradition? It's the way it's always been. Where's it coming from?
Well, I think this behavior is rooted in the idea of, you know, that there isn't abundance, that everybody's views cannot be aired, and more specifically, that conflicting views cannot be dealt with, that there's no way for us to actually debate around these issues. And so, yes, patriarchy would be one of the aspects to that, but it's not necessarily the only one. And I would argue that male politicians would execute in a similar way to take each other out if there's something that they don't feel that they agree about amongst each other.
Do you feel, Ms. Patricia DeLille, that the treatment that you say and you've talked about extensively you received in the DA was specifically because you were a woman and a woman of color?
I think it's a combination of factors. In that, you know, it's also resentment, I felt it was also close to hatred. So
seriously,
it's a combination of all of those factors. But the reason why I fought back the way I did and still fighting, I wanted to show to all the women in our country that all the bad things that happen to us in life, that we should not allow it to happen, that we must demand to be respected and demand to be treated equally. And so we've got all of these rights in the Constitution, and they will really just remain paper rights unless we claim them. But we must demonstrate and have more examples showing that women can fight back. So my detest is wherever they are now, they certainly not achieve what they wanted to achieve, and that is one, to smear my name in public, to humiliate me, to brand me as a criminal, to brand me as a person that's corrupt. And if I didn't fight back, you know, those perceptions would have remained with the rest of South Africans.
Yeah, and yet there was a time, I mean, it is within this context that you say where you felt almost kind of blatant hatred for you. You were able to rise to one of the most senior portfolios in the province. You know, is that not an irony?
No, Imani must understand that all of these things happened in the past 18 months. Before that, you know, I used to work very closely with Leader Helen Zille when she was the party leader. And I worked together with her as the premier and the mayor of the city of Cape Town. And, you know, and we sometimes we agreed, sometimes we agreed to disagree. But there was this mutual respect. It is only the past 18 months when this whole saga unfolded and when I became, like I think many women and men before me in the party, but who just walked away and didn't fight back, became the subject and the target of this abuse.
Was she an ally to you, Helen Zille?
Yeah. The one thing that Helen Zille had told the DA on was to say that the DA is a party of systems and due process, and that we are all equal before the constitution of the DA. And during this whole saga, she did express her opinion that the party is not following due process. And finally, when I went to court, the court affirmed that the party did not follow the due process. And she repeated that she'd warned them that, you know, you must test allegations. You can't put allegations out in the public without having been tested. And at one stage when I was now, I mean, the relationship was just at a very, very low ebb, and the party wanted to talk to me again, I said, look, I'll only talk to you on condition that I bring an intermediary. And I approached Helen Zille to be my intermediary. And when she got the process on the way and it looked like we could find a solution because she respected the constitution of the party, they became very uncomfortable about it and didn't want her to further assist me because the leader of the party, Musi Mamani, feared that should Helen come with a solution as the previous leader, it will reflect bad on him. So yes, Helen is a very principled person.
Do you think that she too, as a woman in a position of leadership, was shut down or kind of, you know, had to also insist on the process being followed in a context of a kind of threatening environment?
Yes, the same happened to her. I mean, she heard on the radio that she has been suspended from the party. Again, they did the same mistake like they did with me now. They didn't follow due process by first writing to her and saying, Helen, can you give reasons as to why you should not be suspended? Musi Mamani just announced a suspension on the radio. So that is the pattern of how this male cabal has operated. Not respecting parties, systems, and due process.
Let's take some calls for Ms. Patricia Delisle Dikeledi Mokoena and Professor Anita Bosch on the line with me this morning. 0861-987-000 is the number to call. And let's go to Nina in Craig Hall. Good morning.
Morning, Iman. Iman, 2 points. The first point, is that I think it's very important to emphasize that women have not been in politics really for longer than 50 years. You could say 100, you can throw in, you know, Queen Elizabeth and maybe an African queen or two, but the truth is that politics, like everything else, has been a male preserve. As an extension of that, in terms of this thing of due process, let's remember that, for instance, in ancient Greece, women, slaves, and children were secondary. They didn't have a vote, and they certainly could not participate. The third thing that I just want to say, in the context of that, and male cabals, it's interesting that the word bullying has come up. Bullying is attached to assassinating, and as one of your guests has said, in terms of how men deal with politics, they would execute their behaviors about anything in a similar way. In other words, we're talking bullying, assassinating, executing. These are the people who historically ran the way that things happened, that states happened, at the expense of women, children, slaves. And so, you know, I think the discourse and the dialogue has to happen with an understanding that this is new history, both in South Africa and internationally. Thanks a lot, Iman.
Thanks for those, Nina in Craig Hall. I'm going to bring back Anita Bosch and Dikeledi Mokoena in a second. Ms. Patricia Dill, I know that you have also, you can't stay with us for the entire program, but what I want to ask you then is, you know, what your parting shot is for those who made your life a misery, as in your description, in the DA, those members of that male cabal, what would be your parting shot to them?
Through all of this, I was always concerned, you know, if they behave like this in a public arena where this is a political organization.
Yeah, it's such a pity. Patricia, Auntie Pat, sorry, I have to stop you there because the line is just dropping out. I do want those last words from you. So we'll just give you a quick call back and we'll try and reestablish, because I want to get just very quickly what happens next. Will there be a recess of the ID? And I remember famously talking to Patricia de Lille when she had made, in fact, I think we broke the news at the time I was on ENCA, where she had announced that she was going to be throwing her hat in the ring in terms of a coalition between the ID and the Democratic Alliance. And I think that was a key moment. I'll come back to my guest to get their appraisal of what happens now in a space where we saw in the Liberation struggle, for example, a number of famous women personalities, people like Mama Albertina Sisulu, and the women of the 1956 past march had to kind of stand up against men, even inside the ANC, and had to find lone allies of women's struggles to be able to emerge as political figures. And why is it that on the back of that history where women had, you know, rallied and had sacrificed alongside men, we don't see in the democratic space quite the same light shedding on the power of women politicians in our country? 10:30 exactly.
Iman Rapesi on Power 98.7.
It is 27 minutes to 11 o'clock. Professor Anita Bosch, Dikeledi Mokoena, and Patricia de Lille are on the line with me. We're talking about fighting the patriarchy in the political spaces. I've got to let Patricia de Lille go, so I'm going to take a quick final comment from her about your parting shots, Auntie P, to the men in your party who you say have made, you know, who bullied you and made your life miserable.
My message really to all of them is that we do need to treat all people with respect, and that as women we are not asking for a special favor, but that we are entitled to be treated the same in terms of the party rules and constitution. And then in terms of our nation as mothers, we must also do more in bringing up our boy child and children to teach them to respect women in society, because we bring up this little brat who one day turn out to be standing for patriarchy. And it's up to us again in our family homes to start teaching young boys from a young age already. So thank you for the opportunity, Iman, and we'll talk soon.
Quick one on the ID, is it coming back? I was with you. Do you remember that day at the ISC at the Rock in Pretoria? I was on ENCA, and that's where you made the announcement that you were open for coalitions. What's the story today, years later?
I will be consulting my family in the coming weeks. I've always said that I can serve my country in any capacity, and I'm still committed to serving the people of our country to ensure that more people taste the fruits of our new democracy. I will be making an announcement in 2 weeks' time what to do with the next phase of my life.
All right, good luck with the book. Patricia de Lille, the former mayor of the city of Cape Town. Anita, you know, we heard Patricia de Lille as well, not reticent about wanting to name specific names. She did mention James Self. But should we be more forthright and out there, you know, saying things plainly as they are so that we know how to move forward?
Well, I think it's always a combination, and it's never just one strategy. So there's times at which you name and you go full on in order to open up an issue, and then there's other times when you actually pull back. I think the behavior that we're seeing, the leadership behavior of Mr. Lil, clearly shows that she is thinking about what the influence of her actions are. She's considering what it means to be a very, very public leader and somebody that has to set an example. And this is what I was speaking about dealing with conflict in general, of which bullying, is one form of that. But is the idea of rather trying to be quite constructive about it, but not standing back. And this is an interesting phenomenon that I'm viewing in her behavior, at least in the public behavior that we are able to see, is what she's doing is she's telling it like it is, standing her ground, being quite firm about what her rights and responsibilities are, but she is not going on the offensive in a negative and destructive way. And I think this is a very interesting way of dealing with conflict, and obviously taking all of the right measures in terms of the right procedures and those types of things. But this may be a very good example of women's leadership. But again, I'm mindful, and gender studies is the area in which I do most of my work, that any good leader should display this type of behavior. Very often we can also see this from men. So it's really up to the individual to be able to display this type of behavior and to be quite measured in the way in which they address the issue. So coming back to your question, should we be naming and shaming and so forth, that is one of the strategies that can be used. But in a situation where it's already as explosive as what it is, it seems as though that just elicits more mudslinging to happen, and you really don't move beyond that point, which would really be very unhelpful.
I'm going to take a quick comment on this from Dikeledi, and then I'll go to our lines. All our callers holding on. Thank you for those calls. I see you. I'm coming there now. Dikeledi, though, has she struck a blow against what we term the patriarchy in politics, or has she been too reticent?
I think she has, actually, and I think she started a journey, that I think many of us actually need to follow. And also understanding, particularly, and it's great when we go into that space, understanding its nature, right? Understanding that patriarchy in itself also manifests itself in various forms, and it always finds a way of reproducing itself. And often in that reproduction, violence is one of its its tools that it uses. And I think that we've been seeing that, and it's actually great that here you are, you actually have somebody who is, as you know, the prof has mentioned, that is emulating a different form of leadership, a different form of engaging, in the political space. And we certainly need that, right? We need to actually dismantle a lot of the negative behaviors and cultures that actually come with patriarchal violence. So in that sense, yeah, I think that's what I would share and say right now.
Jackie the Poet in Cape Town, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
All right, and you?
All good, thank you. Thank you so much for this conversation, and the panelists have all brought something to the table, and it's a pity that my dog is going crazy. It's a pity that Ms. DeLille has left. But yeah, there's a huge space in the political sphere for a feminist movement or political party, And I see this as a chance to replace the huge gap that is left by Dr. Makhosi Khoza, who was also taken away from that space by patriarchy. And I have to say, it is a patriarchy versus feminist thing. It is exactly that, and there's no running around it or trying to explain it further than that. And I hope she does take that plunge, because many of us are willing and waiting to support her.
Oh, wow. Jackie the Poet, thanks for that. Let's go to Mzwake, who's in Katlehong in Ekurhuleni. Good morning.
Good morning, Iman. I think the presence of Patricia Dill actually blurs the actual discussion we should have. Because the reality of the matter is that in the public opinion, it is not patriarchy that's a problem for her, but rather white superiority. So, but that's a discussion for another day. But for me, if you want to fight,
those things are intertwined, though, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they're intertwined.
Yeah, well, based on what she's telling us now, but I assure you, the vast majority of people that are currently listening to Power are probably thinking, Mara, if you want to speak about the challenges that Patricia had in the DA, it's more the dominance of white people than the dominance of males. And I'm not trying to say patriarchy is not a problem. So can I just leave that and get to the patriarchy story?
All right, go.
And I think the biggest challenge to us killing patriarchy is the marriage institution, especially amongst African families, because currently as things stand, I'm going to decide one day I want to get married. I'm going to go get cows, take them there. They're going to give her the law. This is what you do. You cook for him. You do this for him. You do that for him. So unless we kill those many small institutions within the family, we are going to struggle for a long time to come. And even within the political space,
yeah.
Take a few weeks back, we were talking about Maso Bukwe. And I was disappointed that a lot of what people were telling us about her relates mainly to Robert Sobukwe himself. We were not told about her, unlike what's happening now with Masi Sulu. At least with Masi Sulu, you hear a lot about her.
Well, then you weren't listening to Power, my darling, because
maybe I wasn't on that day.
We've actually talked about how women in leadership roles have been eclipsed. I'm going to hold it there, Mzwake, because I think you raise a good point about what happens in the home, and we talk about how those pathologies are engraved in the way that gender roles, or the way we conceive of gender, or male, female, or you know, any of the other myriad ways of being human, how those roles are defined from the point of which we are grown up and how we are programmed. Broussal in Ekurhuleni. Good morning.
Broussal,
hi, good, thanks, and you?
Yes, man, it's Soli, ne?
Okay, cool, hi.
Yeah, man. What I wanted to say, actually, it is in agreement what Mzwake is saying, that in your discussion on the topic of patriarchy, I think the lady Delile is a wrong example, because of in the eyes of many people, I can assure you, the issue, it is not about her gender, but it is about other issues. So I think she also found it convenient to be invited, and then she used the platform wrongfully to point her problems to be emanating from a patriarchy rather than other issues.
And the other issues, you're agreeing with our previous caller. You're saying this is white male dominance in the DA, that is what the diagnosis of the problem is?
Not entirely, because of, I suspect that she may have had a role herself also on her downfall.
Okay.
But I was just pointing out that sometimes whenever there is a situation between people of different races, we find it convenient to cite racism as the reason for that, and at times we'll find that it is not that.
All right, Broussal, I'm going to take it. No, I'm going to take that example. Quickly. I think we've got it enough. We've got your point well enough. Here's the thing, though, and Dikeledi, I want to put this one to you, is that people are entitled to their own stories. Mm-hmm. They're entitled to their own telling of how they have seen the experience develop mm-hmm. and evolve.
Oh, certainly. And I think that's the beauty about democracy, right? It's basically allowing all forms of truths, all forms of experiences, and all forms of stories to actually come to the fore. You know, allowing various voices. And I think I really appreciate that when we talk about democracy. It's unfortunate that, you know, not many of us actually do respect democratic principles. But just to go back on the concept of patriarchy itself, and I think when I started earlier, you know, I tried to emphasize, perhaps I was sort of speaking too quickly, but when, from my understanding of patriarchy and how we teach it actually in class, is that patriarchy is a system of power, right? And this particular power is organized along, you know, sort of various axes, and those include gender, that race, class, age, sexuality, geopolitics, and so forth, right? So, and when you think about it in that way, then certainly there is no way that you would bring in an analysis and of gender and not necessarily think about race and class and all the other elements. So when we think about it in that way, you see how all of these facets actually intersect with each other to actually bring about a particular context and situation. And like I said, even in the context whereby, you know, men also fight with other men, right, there are certain intersections there, right, if you were to really study that. So when it is men fighting against themselves, we also need to acknowledge that in that case, also patriarchy is at play, because patriarchy then orders men differently, that not men are equal, right, that they're not even regarded in the same way. So for me, when you think about that, when you use the concept patriarchy, it's basically using it as a framework to try and understand what is happening, you know, with a particular phenomenon. So with regards to the feminist movement, certainly, I think that is actually what we need right now, right? And I think it's actually you know, sort of at this perfect moment in our history. And considering, just to go back to the comment that you made before we took a break, about, you know, how, you know, all these wonderful women who fought, who marched, you know, for women's rights and so forth, and yet today in post-apartheid South Africa, we're still struggling with patriarchy, right? And there's something that I want to share that a certain professor once said. That's, her name is Patricia McFadden, Professor Patricia McFadden. She said, basically, a nationalist project is basically about the exclusion of women, right? All forms of nationalisms, right, are basically exclusionary of women. So basically what happened is you have these men who are struggles, basically whatever, be it in South Africa, in Tanzania, or wherever, and you found this everywhere, actually throughout the continent, that you've had women who participated in, you know, the liberation movements, women who actually were quite strong in ending, you know, colonialism.
Yeah.
Yet post-colonialism, right, you had a lot of women who are marginalized, who are, you know, somewhat sidestepped. And when you think about the concept or the way that Professor Patricia McFadden explains this, is that, look, it's because the nationalist project itself was not about including women, right? So basically we bring in women when it basically is something that suits us for whatever, for a particular role, for a particular agenda, right? Hence feminism, right, actually comes in and it's actually fundamental for us to actually, you know, dismantle all of that and highlight all of that, right? And sort of, and in the process of highlighting and diagnosing what is happening, it's so that we actually come up with alternatives for a better society. And I just want to say something last, that, you know, there's one thing that Mambeki said, and not just what she said about feminism. And she said, feminism is actually the highest form of democracy because it actually includes everyone.
I want to bring Professor Anita Bosch in as well on this one. And we used Patricia Dill's experience as kind of a pivot, but it raises questions into all of these areas in our society, whether it is the way that we are programmed, whether it is where we are taught to manage power relationships with our other counterparts in society. And we also are cognizant of the fact that our society is not made up of, you know, gender binaries of men and women. There are many different ways of defining yourself as a human being on this planet. Mm-hmm. That we haven't reached those levels of sophistication, Anita Bosch, in how we will refine and define our relationships with each other. Everything that you know about how you have studied from both the way we are hardwired as human beings, from our, you know, our primordial residue, to the demands of contemporary society, which promotes egalitarianism, which promotes liberty. How do we bring ourselves in step in the creation of a society that is really an activating society for all its members?
Well, I'd like to start off by saying I absolutely agree with what Dikeledi has said, and more specifically with all of these intersections, which makes for a platform of great difference, but also great similarity, you know, very nuanced similarity. And yesterday I was struck by a comment that was made that it's really as though we're trying to remove the nuances out of life. I don't think that is what we're trying to do with the feminist project at all. To the point of, for instance, in politics, women being used for particular agendas. If you just think about why white women got the vote in 1930 in South Africa, it was because Herzog wanted to be reelected. And so white women were asked to support his reelection, and in exchange for that, they got the vote. But yet you could argue, you know, that in society, women as a grouping, clearly, you know, black women around racial lines, there were other forms of oppression there, but have not manifested, you know, to stand our rightful place. I do think that in the way in which we're studying gender relations, the way it interacts, the things that we found, a colleague of mine at the University of Johannesburg together with Stellenbosch University, we found that women are becoming much more androgynous in their approach in workplaces. And that is, this is because workplaces are highly masculinized. For you to be seen as an effective leader, and if we think about politics, we've just discussed this, you've got to be quite aggressive and masculine in your approach.
But is aggression not also feminine?
No, it's not a feminine characteristic. So if you think about femininity and masculinity, I'm not talking about men and women. So in an individual, if you look at the traits that individuals have, if an individual is quite aggressive in their approach, let's say it's a woman, then that characteristic would be labeled as a masculine characteristic. Caring, nurturing, those would be regarded as feminine characteristics. And all of those could be in one individual, irrespective of whether a man or a woman. But what we are finding is that women are not losing their femininity, these aspects that are often regarded as more softer traits, but that in fact they're moving more towards the middle, especially in the work environment. However, men are not moving towards the middle. So the reality is that these social systems that we've constructed, the workplace, politics, and so forth, which were originally built by men for men, are highly masculinized environments. Mm. And for anybody to step into it and to try and survive and eventually thrive, and thrive, I want to say in inverted commas, because it could mean just be successful in a male way, you have to act very often in a male way to be accepted and to survive.
I want to pick up on that picture, that image that you've created, and I've brought Jackie the poet back. Jackie's also Jackie, if you're the right Jackie, I hope it's the right Jackie, co-founder Pride Yarona, right? That's you.
That's right. How do you know? So quickly.
Because I'm a journalist. Listen, the reason I brought you back is because, so that characterization is almost to say that we have a problem with this house, but the house is built. So when we come into the house, we've got to, you know, we've got to find our space to make it ours, but it's still inside this edifice, inside this construct. It feels as if that is the wrong, I would say it's a problematic approach, which already accrues or confers upon men who are dominant in the system, you know, the kind of an acceptance of their power, rather than going in and saying we actually need to dismantle this entire edifice and we need to reconfigure and redefine it. And I think even from, you know, an LGBTIQA plus perspective as well, you know, there possibly is, you know, the more potential for cowering, because if it's in inverted commas hard enough for straight women, I mean, how much harder is it going to be for members of those communities?
All right. That's correct. It's an animal farm thing. Because if you look, go back, like, because people are talking about blackness. That's why you have movements like black first, whatever, because then you're a woman second. People don't understand intersectionality, especially in the political space. I was fortunate enough to do a course on political leadership with Triangle Project and Victory Institute last year that taught us intersectional feminism in politics and how it can be the solution. And you're quite correct in that you can't change the system from inside. It's always going to turn you into what it is. The whole thing has to be dismantled. If you want to build a round room, a rendezvous, you will not do that with a square foundation. So to the entire roots, to the very foundation, it has to be dismantled. So I do hope that Ms. DeLille chooses to go her own route, which is based on feminism, to dismantle patriarchy. And of course, there's so many things that will stop you from doing that. if she decides to join a political party, some of us are going to follow her wherever she goes. She has to make sure that she's at least a deputy in that space. Because if you look at the ANC, it has regressed completely. There's only five men and one woman in the top six, and she's only there because she was competing against another woman. Trump is president of America. So if you look at the global political perspective, it is regressed. This is an opportune moment for Ms. DeLille to give us what we need. And I think we all know that we all need this. Okay. A feminist political movement for 2019, please.
Thanks, Jackie the Poet, for that one. I'm going to bring in some callers really quick, and then I'll take some final comments about the what next from Dikeledi Mokoena and Professor Anita Bosch. Rastivovo, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
it's the producers playing with your name, Rusty. Go ahead.
One quick one. You know, when Patricia Deville joined the DA, one would have expected that if any tensions would arise in the future, they would be ideological. You know, it would be the fact that she's got a Pan-Africanist outlook. You know, we...
Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on with our lines. Yeah. Gonna have to come back to Bruce Steve. Gift, you're in Sunnyside real quick. Good morning.
Please wait.
Exalvach. Okay. Let's try, because they were holding on quite long. Let's give Gift another chance. Gift, hi. Are you there?
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, Gift.
Yes, I want to comment on this issue of Patricia. Those who are saying that she's not a victim of patriarchy but of white superiority, I think it's a very confused statement. Because if we check, white superiority is advanced by white male. White superiority means dominance of white male. Even women during apartheid, even white women themselves during apartheid, they were oppressed. They were found nowhere in leadership positions. But simply, they were just beneficiaries of the end of the product of apartheid. But Patricia DeLille, she suffered under the hands of patriarchy.
All right. I think that's a to the point comment. Let's see if Bruce Steve is back. Your line is better. Bruce Steve?
Hi, Iman. I just wanted to make a quick point that, you know, when Patricia joined the DA, one would have expected that in future, tensions would arise, particularly from her political and ideological outlook. You know, that she had been a Pan-Africanist, which would not be accommodated within the DA. And my suspicion really would be that someone like James Spence would certainly have serious, you know, problems with Patricia's ideological outlook, you know, and therefore yeah. Look for other, you know, scapegoats to use just to undermine her. I would think, and I think Mzwandile has a point. I mean, this is merely extending Mzwandile's point.
All right, thanks for that, Bruce Steve. I mean, you know, we knew how fiery she was, through the PAC. She talked, I was listening to her this morning as well, talk about, Azapo and the PAC and those kinds of revolutionary traits, which didn't really take root inside the party that she eventually elected to be a part of and to take a leadership position in. Dikeledi Mokoena, what next for fighting the patriarchy in politics in South Africa? Really quick one, and then I'll get a final quick word from Prof. Bosch.
All right. Well, I think for me, also, because I'm now thinking here about starting a political party, and that in itself is not just an easy thing, right?
Are you really?
Yeah, well, thinking about issues of finance, right? I mean, who's going to finance that? And then finance, how mm-hmm. is that also going to sort of influence the policies that that specific party is going to, you know, sort of advance?
Mm-hmm.
And then will those policies themselves be pro-women? Right, so those kinds of questions. So it's not just a simple thing of starting a political party that just happens to be, you know, led by a woman. I think there's so many other aspects, and I think this is where, I guess those who are actually feminist and a pro and alternative world, this is where we actually come in to put our money and our support and resources where we actually want it to be. So if there's a new political party, which is a political or feminist movement for that matter, then it needs to be financed. Right, it needs all the resources for it to be successful.
Okay.
So that ultimately, actually, women's, including men as well, but largely us dismantling this problem or patriarchy successfully. Other than that, we'll just have another political party which is going to reproduce the same problems.
Prof. Bosch, literally 30 seconds. Go for it.
Well, we're sitting with two issues, I think. The current, the lived experience,
in which we have to understand the dynamics of what's happening, and you have to survive. You have to find ways of surviving without being inauthentic, and I think that is the challenge for women and those men that are concerned citizens. And then there's the other issue of trying to change the aircraft while we're flying and change it into something else, a spacecraft perhaps. And that is the challenge of massive societal movements. And these movements, each one of us can become part of and have a profound impact when people collectively believe in something that is much better for the good of humanity, not only of women.
I want to thank the both of you and Patricia DeLille as well for your time this morning. And I think for giving us some insights that we can really work with and we can workshop around as we try and take this conversation further, but also in the way in which we do that work that you talked about, dismantling this kind of institutional patriarchy in our political spaces. Thank you so much for your time. 11 o'clock, Power News.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.